Hello, my name is Martin Maudsley from the Talking Tent Project, and we are recording a series of conversations about the Dorset Area of Outstanding Natural Beauty, celebrating 60 years of the Dorset AOMB and all its varied landscapes, from the Jurassic coasts to the Iron Age hill forts and all the fields and farms and forests in between. So we're trying to record how people and place have interacted with the landscape of Dorset AOMB and the ways in which the future might unfold. We're going to go through a cycle of the seasons, looking at how things change in the natural world through the year, and talk about how the last year has gone and how we've grown a sense of deeper gratitude, I think, for having this amazing landscape at our feet. So my name is Martin Maudsley. I'm a storyteller based in Bridport, and I'm in love with this little orchard. I've been here many times, and I'm sitting underneath the trees. It's not quite harvest time, but there's definitely a massive autumn ripening going on around us, and it's called Dorset Nectar Orchard. Mm-hmm. And I'm happily sat with the owners. And can you introduce yourselves?
I'm Oliver Strong.
And I'm Penny. Penny Strong.
And so, did you imagine that you were going to be apple growers and cider makers? Is that a plan, or did you somehow find yourself here?
I think necessity found us.
That is.
We do love the outdoors, and we've always worked for ourselves in different ways of life. I've been on many farms in South Africa and in America, as well as here. So, farming and agricultural work is something we know.
In your blood.
Yes.
Also, previously, when we lived in the States, we were in horticulture. Mm-hmm. For 11 years. We had a topiary business, making large topiary sculptures and for botanical gardens and parks.
And looking out beyond the trees right now, we can see some topiary and some metal sculptures.
Right. Yes.
And so, is that part of the business, or was it?
It was part of the business, and this has changed. In 2009, when we had the recession here in England, we had to seriously change and make the orchard work for ourselves.
So what was happening to the apples?
We had a contract with Gamers, and we sold all the apples every year to them.
Okay.
A large factory producer.
Yeah.
Right. So mass-produced cider maker.
Yes.
But that didn't quite work out very well, because you did, for starters, you barely covered costs.
Right.
You barely covered your costs for what you got as a primary product. As well as you couldn't actually use, they didn't want us to use it. They wanted 100% of the...
All the apples or nothing.
The harvest. So that meant that we couldn't even take 20% of that and to make
we
our own cider
initially.
And try to make a product.
So you tried to step into
it slowly
a little
bit.
So you're forced into the bit. So how did you feel about starting to make cider from scratch?
Well... it's exciting. We have a young family at the time, and they were keen. We left America having lived on also land, so it wasn't new in that way. But we lost a lot, and we had to rebuild our lives again by moving from one country to another, back home again.
And did you have to learn from books or from meeting people, or did you have an instinctive sense of how
have.
To make
cider is traditionally English.
Yes.
Did not come from American anyway.
Okay.
And yes, we learned a lot. We learned a lot from people. Rose Grant, for instance, taught us through, we met her through our church a long time ago, and she told us a lot. And through some books. Penny and I reading.
Andrew Lee, yes.
Andrew Lee is well known here in this country.
A small technical book on cider making, but Rose Grant is an elderly lady. She's probably the country's England's oldest cider maker.
Wow.
And she's now probably round about 80. When we met her, she was about 70.
Something, yeah.
And she was still hauling her own apples and picking her own apples.
And she picks up apples from us as well.
Planting her own orchard just outside of Wootton. Wootton Houghton?
Wootton.
Somewhere over there.
She's still making cider now.
She is a lot less now. But
okay.
She's won most of the awards that can be won in this country.
Okay.
Yes.
Big cups and so forth.
And so she was very much a mentor, and she helped us to learning how to make cider.
To blend our apples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now you've been making it, what, over 10 years, is it?
Yes.
So,
yeah. Yes.
I can say it's delicious. I've drank it many times. And it always seems to taste better when whenever you say, go to the barrel, Martin, and help yourself.
Best, it is that way.
Yeah, it feels very natural to be drinking it on the farm.
It's the freshest and not been played with.
We're interested in the cycle of the orchard, really. And we're not quite at harvest yet, are we?
Apples are later than dessert apples.
Okay.
We start mid to beginning of September to late September, depending on the year.
Yeah.
This particular year is our off year. Some of the apples have gone on holiday.
Okay. That happens every 2 years some trees.
Every second year they abundance, and the following year none.
Biennial. Okay. So some of the trees, this top 4 acre patch over here is biennial.
Okay.
And the rest of the orchard is
producing, yeah. And how many different varieties do you have in this?
11.
11 varieties, yeah. And they're specifically cider varieties.
Only cider.
Fantastic.
Yeah. You can't do anything but make cider.
Yeah. So in a couple of weeks, is that right? You'll be really busy with harvesting.
And then we would harvest to Christmas or even over Christmas.
That long?
Yeah. Our Portus Perfection are in the trees holding on.
As long as that. And that's a lovely apple variety.
Yes,
I've tasted that one.
It's quite tarty and really it makes a lovely single variety as well.
And after that, what's the next stage in your year?
After that, it's then pruning.
Right.
Well, first, lucky enough, we have this wassailing.
Yes,
it gives
thank
us
you
a
for
break. So when we celebrate the orchards and ask for a new crop the following year.
Yeah.
So we have that break in work.
And can I ask, as you know, I'm very involved with you in being here every year, wassailing the trees, and I love it as much as any. But you know, as a commercial grower, is that important to you, to be wassailing the trees? Talking about going out in the winter and standing with the trees and scaring away the bad spirits, giving a toast of cider back to the trees, and as you say, celebrating the abundance of the orchard. Why is that important to you as a commercial cider maker?
Because we're not robots, we're human.
No.
And we need tradition, and we need to hold on to that.
It's part of the magic
of
the whole of apple growing. There's so much to it, you know. It's very much a community
gathering
it's a community gathering of people and sharing,
and it feels very generous. You're always very generous at you know, releasing the cider barrels and giving us something to eat.
There's no limit to share, because with their smiles we grow too.
Well, we have so much, you know.
Yes,
we have
enough to share.
Apples and so much juice and cider to share within
a natural thing for you.
Yes, very much so.
Of course.
So there's the community, which I've enjoyed being part of your community over the last few years. But there's also, I'm sensing from both of you, a sort of not just growing to produce cider to share, but something about the land itself. How does being managers of a landscape, how does that affect you?
We right from the start put a tie on our land that we cannot divide the land in any way and put it in, only keep it agricultural.
Legally, that's wonderful.
You can't sell half of it for commercial reasons. You can't put a house out and say, I'm going to sell half of that. Mm-hmm. It's all tied. The house, everything is tied to agricultural.
Amazing.
And our children want to keep it that way as well.
Yeah.
So we know it'll be there 50 years'
also,
time.
Also, if when you have land, when you have a piece of land, it is a place where, you know, no matter if you have hard times and you're... It's a place for your family to grow up. It's for your place for your children to play. It is a place for you to plant your potatoes.
Mm.
And if there's if you have no work, and well, it sees you through.
The basics can be met from the land.
It's a place. It's a place to plant to rest your dead. Mm. You know, it is a.
Wow.
It gives you all of that.
Yeah, we are only stewards of this land, and if we can take that knowledge and wisdom to the next generation so they can hold on to that, so we can have an orchard in 100 years' time and further, and not lose that.
Mm.
And that's why we wanted to keep it agricultural tied, and that's why we want to educate our own children for the generations to come.
And it feels perfect, isn't it? You know, these trees have got deep roots, and you're
absolutely
talking about those roots carrying on to bear fruit in the future.
So. Yes, very much so. And there is a process of taking out some of them and replanting new, so it will not.
Yeah.
It'll always be an orchard.
You have 5 children, so your whole family have, over the years, one at least is away now, but your whole family have been involved.
Oh, very much so.
With
the oldest is away now in Plymouth, studying university, but she started helping us initially. Sure. She was the biggest, the oldest, and she grew up with us making cider and learning with us at the time.
But the others are still.
And so did the other, and so did the boys, not far behind. So, right. You know.
Yes. Now they're actually partners in the company, and they're very devoted in it. So they love it.
So quite quickly, you're already now a two generational. family business, aren't you?
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes.
And they seem very keen. Do you think they will stay on this land with this business? Is that their future?
I think so. I think they're seeing. There's so many opportunities that, and so many things, if you just be creative with your piece of land, there are just so many ways in which you can use it. And we're very, very, very fortunate to be able to have these mature trees. These trees are 47 years old already.
Wow.
So they're still producing.
And they will
really
carry on
well.
For a number of years after.
Oh, they absolutely.
Should, yes. Apple trees grow quite old. So we would think that we have probably a good yield for the next 15 years or so, before we'd start to see a drop off in the yield. But
then you'll have to
think of a succession plan.
No, I think we keep on fertilizing because we're organic. We use foliar feed, and if you look after the tree, it'll be there for some more time than just 15 years.
So have you always been? Well, you mentioned this organic. Is that part of your principles and ethos?
Oh, absolutely. Right. Very much so. We've never used chemicals throughout our lives in different things.
It is definitely organic by choice. Mm-hmm. We 2008 when we first late 2008 when we moved here to the orchard, we went in order to sort of give us an additional form of income. We took on chickens and we decided to do the organic for eggs.
Yes.
That is, yes.
Yeah, so we started the organic
going
process.
Up and down the rows, in electrified flexi nets.
Okay.
So an acre at a time would be moved every couple of weeks under the trees, and so it would have shade and protection, and they would eat an enormous amount of grass, so we wouldn't have to mow, and we would remove them, so they wouldn't dig the grass up. And open the soil, because you don't want that. So they ate a lot and we moved them quick enough before them harming the ground.
And they would produce these eggs with, orange yolk.
So this is why we wanted organic. We wanted organic eggs.
Yeah.
And that was one of the reasons. And we wanted the orchard to be organic from then on.
And have you noticed the does that affect the sort of the nature of the biodiversity of your site?
When we first got to orchard, there was a bad mold problem.
Okay.
There was a lot of scab and mold on the leaves themselves that the orchard was suffering, and the chickens would scratch and break up the leaves in the winter, and they broke down the mold. Mm-hmm. And now we don't have the problem anymore.
Wonderful.
One of the causes of that is because of the of leaves and old and apples just sitting on the ground and not actually being being picked
turned
up,
over or picked
turned
up, yeah.
over, and so you have this fruit sitting there, and then that causes mold problems.
So now you're quite
chickens,
rigorous.
The chickens really did well for us in stopping in
eradicating a lot of bugs that weren't good for the orchard. Because they'd overwhelmed the natural process of it all by having so much rotten matter on the ground.
And was this a traditional use of orchards to have chickens and apples
I don't know about traditional.
They used to have sheep underneath.
We've had sheep as well. We've had sheep until just recently, just over a year ago. So we don't have sheep, but we have some piggies in the corner.
Yes, I've seen them.
You have seen them.
Yes. So I've seen sheep and I've seen your chickens in the past and your pigs there. But I've also, just glancing around there, I see a tent. So what are you doing? You're growing campers, are you? is that a commercial thing or is that just a...
It's a temporary... it is a commercial in a sense, but it's temporary for the summer.
Yes.
And that's helping us through
a difficult time,
this hard time where we have a lot of cider in our barrels. So the camping does help, and it's only for a couple of months a year. In fact, this is the last weekend, and then you're getting ready for harvesting after that.
Right, so
So
is that the future for you to be quite diversified? You talked about doing it for parts of the year, and you've talked about different livestock. So are you just keeping your eyes open to different possibilities alongside the apples?
Absolutely, yes. We would also, with the apples, we would like to do the full circle with cider making and vinegar making. Uh-huh. And now with the bulk of cider that we have, we want to actually bring in a still. So then we have the whole full circle of where the cider can go.
Apple brandy. Mm-hmm.
Apple brandy, correct.
That would be very nice.
It would be. I can't wait to try that with you. And I'm sure there'll be a tradition that we can use apple brandy for as well.
Yes.
And just to finish, really, I mean, it is a little bit of a difficult time for many of us. I mean, I'm here with Sarah, who's a poet, and I'm a storyteller. It's been difficult for me working in these situations of lockdown. How has it affected you in this short term, and how do you see your way out of it?
I think that it has actually made us stronger. We've had to adapt tremendously. So most of our trade previously was through distributors going to pubs and the pub trade,
right,
and to restaurants and farm shops, etc. Mm-hmm. So all trade only. But we have found
90%
with lockdown. The first thing that the first couple of days, together with my older daughter's help, she was telling us what to do. It's like you do this, that, and that, and the other.
Right.
And that's how you set up the website.
With this family, to have an advisor like that.
Yeah, because our website was old-fashioned.
It was a bit clunky, and it wasn't mobile-friendly. Okay. So just making a more mobile-friendly website was the first thing. And then in order to encourage the online sales. And then the first few months of lockdown, it did, you know, okay, and sort of helped to sort of tick over and pay bills. However, I think that we're finding just having people trying to encourage more people to the orchard is the way forward.
And we'll teach people where their cider comes from and how it was made.
Yes.
Very much so.
And people are interested in
they
that.
They are, yes.
Yeah. So you have tours here, I know that.
Correct,
people,
yes.
I mean, is that a good way of...
It's excellent, really, and they've written back and they've really enjoyed it.
Really?
Yeah, it's about an hour and a half.
So it's a cultural, it's sort of an educational thing, but educating them about the sort of really rich cultural history of cider, as well as we talk about everything from, you know, the pressing to wassailing to apple varieties and their growth habits.
Lots to take in. So I love this orchard. I probably think I love it best in the winter when we go with our flaming hay and we scare away the bats. What's your favourite, you know, having seen this orchard on a day-to-day basis, what's your favourite time of year?
It's either the blossom time.
Yes.
Can you imagine the whole orchard full of blossom and then a slight breeze and snowing petals?
Mm. That's a wonderful
incredible
description.
Yes,
we must make it over. We keep saying we should do that.
And the sound of the bees, because you hear the bees as well.
Is that's the time special for you as well, Penny?
No, actually. I think my favourite, I mean, it's beautiful, the blossom time. It's stunning. However, there's probably nothing more beautiful than, let's say, end September, just before harvest, and we're just checking how things are growing,
which is now, really,
and
which is now
coming up next 2 weeks, and the apples are in full colour, and they are just dripping from the trees, and that is the most special time.
Come October, November, and it's like thundering horses underneath here.
Oh, really?
All the apples are falling.
That's great. Well, we were talking earlier, Sarah and I, that we have, you've probably heard me tell the story, there's a character called Lazy Lawrence, who is a horse who is the guardian spirit of all the West Country orchards, so maybe it's not only the sound of apples, but it's the sound of little fairy
hooves. Absolutely.
While all of this talk is making me feel very thirsty, I'm going to potter off to the shop, I think, and buy a bottle of Dorset Nectar.
thank you for your
time, your favourite time of year, Penny. It's a beautiful orchard. I love it here. It's really nice to have got to know you over the years, and long may these apples grow in abundance.
Thank you very much.
Fantastic.
So I hope you enjoy listening to our conversation, and we would really love to hear some of your conversations and stories about particular places within the Dorset AOMB that you love, places that you go to when you want to get away from it all, places that you've been on family holidays, places that you've worked and got to know very slowly over the years, any stories that you have about particular landmarks or even times of the year, things that you look out for in nature as the cycle of the seasons goes around. Please do get in touch with Talking Tent and tell us some of your stories and your memories and your anecdotes and your favourite things about being in this wonderful county of Dorset. So thank you very much for listening, and I look forward to catching up with you again.